Good evening and welcome to the Franchise Tag Podcast with me, your host, Freddie Hall. Welcome back, Andrew and Adam. It has been a quieter week or so for the NFL. There's been a few things going on in the lead up to next season, but it doesn't mean we've got some things to definitely talk about as well. Lots of three topics really on our minds this evening, and then we'll be moving into more draft content coming very soon, which should be a lot of fun. And it's definitely these two guys' specialty as well. So yeah, plenty to talk about in the next coming weeks as we get ever closer to the draft, which is on the Thursday, the 26th of April, if my brain remembers. So you better book off the Friday because it starts very late and goes on into the early morning if you want to catch all of the first round, which is what I've done. So it'll be a very fun night for myself, Andrew and Adam, and a lot of our friends who are very into it as well. But we'll bring to begin with, we'll talk about, there's been some stuff with the NFL committees and the meetings and the owners and that coming together, and there's been some rule changes in the last few days. One of the biggest ones is the hip drop tackle, which it was a competition committee but had a unanimous decision on the rule change. So that was on that was yesterday. They banned the swivel hip drop tackle, according to Ian Rapoport. Apparently, there was no surprise there, despite the NFLPA's objections. The NFL made clear it wanted what it calls the swivel hip drop tackle out of the game, and now it is expect more fines than flags as the league and coaches work to remove the technique. That is per Tom Pelissero. A mixed reaction to a lot of this. The league has not exactly been in favour of it. Obviously, the NFLPA but represents the Players Association and the players themselves against it as well. Andrew, is the big thing is going to be from players is, why are you not just letting players play the game here? What's your thoughts on this subject?
Well, the reason it's been come in, isn't it? Because there has been less points being scored year on year in that, and the injuries to the offensive players. So it's just protect the offensive players, safety of the sport, and more than anything for Roger Goodell, make the sport more money because people want to see more points. So in that aspect, they're the reasons why it was a committee that made the decision and not the coaches and the players being asked, because if they were asked, it would never get passed, because this has essentially made it really, really difficult for defenders now to tackle. You know, first it was no high tackles, then it was no low tackles. Now you can't tackle around the middle. What can you do? I know a lot of the players have come out and they've posted and moaning about a lot of the defenders, saying it's going to turn into flag football soon. But yeah, I understand why Roger Goodell's done it and why the reasoning behind it, but I don't like the decision because I think there's going to be a lot of grey area with this. We're going to see a lot of 15-yard penalties and a lot of flags this year because it's just a rugby tackle, isn't it, essentially? It's to me, I don't think this is a tackle that people are intentionally trying to injure players. I've got a few more thoughts about it, but I'll let one of you have a rant before I go into it a bit more.
Well, Adam, it's essentially, in my mind, it's asset protection, isn't it? This is trying to be, it's asset protection. I'll probably give my opinion in a moment, but what's your thinking on this? Because Landry said there, if this is more flags, I mean, it sounds like they're going to be doing fines, not flags, hopefully, but there's going to be flags in this for these, I can imagine. And that's the last thing all of us want as fans, isn't it?
Yeah, the idea that it's going to be, it's a strange one, because the idea that it's going to be more fines than flags means that it's not going to stop it. Because you're just going to, what are you going to do? You're going to fine a multi-millionaire, cut like 10, 15 grand every game. He ain't going to care. So it's like, it's a weird logic if you think that that's going to make a difference. Then you've got, I would argue tackle better would be my argument. Like, when you've got them head on, tackle them. It's when, like you say, it's the swivel one, isn't it? So it's like if you've got Lamar Jackson coming at you and he's made a move and he's gone round you and you haven't made the move quick enough, then he's gone. You can't tackle him, basically, because you can't jump and bring him down. Because, like you say, it's about protecting these players from getting injuries like Mark Andrews did or Tony Pollard did. You know, that's what it's all about. So, you know, tackle better. Actually aim for the guy. Where it becomes difficult for them. I will grant you, where it becomes difficult is when you're coming from behind them. That's the real issue. But I think you've just got to swipe the ankles. That's what I think you've got to do. Just literally go down to the floor and take with your hands. That's all you can do now. I mean, that's the only thing. So, yeah, I just think tackle better.
So, some of these guys, you imagine, this is what I think, the tight ends are going to see a hell of a lot more of the ball going forward because they're big guys. You know, gone are the days of like your Ray Lewis and Brian Urlacher and defenders like that. They're in that position. If you're not a big defender and you're a fast defender, how are you taking down people like Kelce and Andrews without trying to bring them to the ground by leaving the ground?
Well, you say that, but actually tight ends are getting smaller. They're becoming more athletic ones. They're not getting bigger, are they? They're actually getting smaller. But like you say, at the end of the day, it's all about keeping the score going up. And all the time you've got betting involved now, they want that score to keep going up because there's more you can bet on. That's what it is. But it's not flag football. It's nowhere near flag football. Anyone who comes out and says that, it just isn't. It's like, yes, it makes it harder. Yes, the defenders don't get the kudos that they always got. But it's been like that for how long? Forever. That's how it's always been for the defenders. They're still getting paid, aren't they? They're still, I mean, you know, we're talking about a defender later on who's just got a very nice contract. I mean, what more do you know? Okay, you don't, it's harder for you. But at the end of the day, if you haven't got any quarterbacks out there because they all get injured, you haven't got a job. So you kind of got to deal with that.
I think, I mean, I'm going to sound like I'm sitting on the fence, but I'm not sitting on the fence on this. I'm just weighing the arguments. Is that I completely get with your, just, you know, you need to adjust your game. Like when the rule came in about landing defenders sacking quarterbacks and landing full body weight on top of the quarterback, and that got started penalised. It wasn't the best players that were getting penalised. Aaron Donald was never getting penalised for it.
Exactly.
Back at the time when that got brought in, he was one of the top defenders, top edge rushers, wasn't getting penalised. TJ Watt wasn't getting penalised. It was everybody. It was the players of the higher echelon adapted their game. I would argue the same thing. You're going to have to just adapt the game. The NFL is an ever-changing world in terms of athleticism and size and technique. So you just have to go with that. I don't think this makes it disappear. Like we said, there's players are still getting fined for big tackles, for head-to-head contact. Flags are being thrown for that still. And fines are given out for that. So I think we are going to see that. My big worry is, like Andrew said, the grey area. When this happens in, I don't know, let's say the divisional round and that 15 yards, and then the Ravens lose to the Bengals, for example, I don't know, just pulling teams out of my head. And it was in the last two minute warning, like that's when the microscope will really come out on this. For me, though, I don't agree with it. I don't think it should be, as in my actual whole opinion, rather than sitting on the fences, but I don't agree with it. These injuries do happen. That is just part of the game. And I understand that the scoring's got to go up and that these are assets essentially to these owners. But we've got to have, there's got to be some contact. There's got to be more things that make this different. If you don't want to watch a contact sport, you know, watch basketball. I know there is contact in there, but it's nowhere near the height of NFL. And I mean, even hockey, ice hockey now in the States is such a big sport, obviously. And that feels like it's got a lot of contact as well. You can't take out all contact, and I think it is ever-changing, but I still don't think that the fans necessarily have fully embraced ever that change. I mean, we still hear it over here about the contact of people with the rugby football and what you know, people just blooming kill each other in NFL. You know, no, but people actually really are not allowed to tackle each other anymore, it feels like, and it is an ever-changing world, so... Yeah, it was unfortunate with them two injuries that happened last year, but I'd argue that there is always a risk of injury play in this game. But we want to see competitiveness and contact, don't we?
The main one, the Andrews one, I think it was Andrews and Pollard, isn't it? The two that they're talking about. But if you've rewatched that one, Wilson doesn't try to injure him, does he? It's not like it wasn't a malicious tackle. You know, this is the reason why I don't think it should necessarily be banned. I don't think it's a tackle. You know, I understand, don't hit him near the head. That makes perfect sense. I understand.
Yeah, no one's ever argued that one.
You know, don't hit him low, you know, with the sense of the area. But I just don't think this is a tackle that's malicious and is out there that's causing injuries. I just think in any term of falling, when you're a big guy playing at full space, you're going to have some injuries. And that's my reasoning behind it. Because, like I say, people are saying this is the rugby tackle. And you've got to take the rugby players and have a look at them. They're not getting injured left, right, centre every week. And that is their main type of tackle that they do. So that's the reason for me of why I'm not 100% sure where they should be moving this. But obviously, again, I said I understand why it's been done and what that does to the sport and what it does to new people coming to watch it. So I can get on board with that.
Is it the main type of tackle that you have in rugby? I mean, whenever I've watched rugby, there's a lot of people going head to head and they're tackling, they're wrapping their arms around them going forwards at the offense.
If you wrap your arms around them and then move your body weight down, that's the hip drop tackle.
Yeah, but it's if your feet's leaving the floor, isn't it? This is the problem. It's the swivel one. It's the problem. Body weight, isn't it? If you're going straight, then you're not doing it, are you? It's where you're sort of basically going out like that and wrapping your arms around them. That's the problem. Because obviously, if your feet isn't on the floor, then all your weight has to go on them. Whereas if you're going head on, obviously you don't have that problem. Look, I think the final thing with it for me anyway is that if they've come out and said 230 instances of this happening last season, 65% up from 2022. You had some high-profile guys basically go out for a long period of time, and that there's a 20 to 25% injury rate from that tackle. And I think, as we've seen with, like, you know, head-on tackles and not being, you know, lowering your helmet and all that when you tackle, that got taken out. Yeah, okay, you still get it, but you don't get it as often as you used to. Same as here. There's still contact. I don't see how it's suddenly become a non-contact sport because they've just taken this away. It doesn't feel like it's the end of any sort of contact. It does feel like it's changing it. And as you say, I mean, the people that are going to have to officiate it, they're the ones that are going to struggle because you've suddenly got to be either hard on it from day one and stick all the way through, or it's going to be people's opinion, and that's where it becomes a problem. But I think you have to probably try and get it out of the game because it's proven that it's causing more injuries.
Adding another pressured situation to a referee is exactly what the referees need.
Right. Yeah, yeah, they love it. They love it.
That's exactly what this league needs at the minute. Right, we'll move on to what was the blockbuster trade of the last few days, and that was the Jerry Sneed, the cornerback for the Kansas City Chiefs, being traded to the Tennessee Titans. Tennessee sent a third-round pick in the 2025 draft to Kansas City and swapped seventh-round picks in the 2024 draft. On the back of this, obviously, Kansas City franchise tagged Sneed, and now he has gone to the Titans. He's now in, I believe it's in the last few hours, I think, is that he's signed a contract extension, which is a 4-year, $76.4 million deal, includes $55 million guaranteed and a $20 million signing bonus. I'm getting this from CBS Sports. It makes him one of the highest paid cornerbacks in NFL history, which has now come to fruition. Sneed's $19.1 million annual. Average annual value now ranks sixth highest amongst corners. His $55 million guaranteed ranks fourth highest. And it turns out the Indianapolis Colts were also interested. However, Sneed was looking for a place where he could get that big time extension. Sneed have been a fantastic corner. I mean, in a defense, Adam, that we've sort of said every year is the forgotten thing for the Kansas City Chiefs until it comes to the playoffs. And then suddenly people start talking about it because it feels like that's when it matters. Whereas obviously in the season, it's always about their offense, about Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, this year, Zaire Pacheco, in the past, Tyreek Hill, I suppose. But really, their defense has always been quite solid for the last 4 years, and Sneed has been sort of the flag bearer of that, in my mind, a little bit. Initially, what did you think of the trade to begin with, and then on the back of that, this extension as well?
I thought it was probably a reasonably fair value. I thought they got for him. A lot of people were coming out and saying that they thought that he was quite, you know, Titans got him quite cheap. But I thought that they, I suppose you could argue that because it's a 25 pick rather than a 24 pick. But to me, I just sort of thought, the problem is like there wasn't the Chiefs were never gonna pay. They were never gonna sign him up for a long term deal. They had already gone used a lot of their money on the defense with Chris Jones, and that was why they franchise tagged him. I think the Titans knew that, and I think pretty much all the other teams knew that. So they were never gonna pay a lot for him. So the fact that they got a third in 2025, and was it swapping sevenths, isn't it, or something? Is that this year?
This year,
swapping sevenths. Yeah, I mean, I just felt like the value was probably what you were going to get, because they knew that the Chiefs were kind of over a barrel a little bit for it. There wasn't much that they could do. From the Titans' point of view, I think they've got a solid veteran who's going to do pretty well for them at corner for the next couple of years. Could you argue they've overpaid maybe a little bit because it's a four-year deal? Maybe if it was like a three-year deal, it would have been better for him, because once he's 28 now, so once he's like 31, 32, you sort of think, are you going to get the same guy? Probably not. But, you know, they're in a position where they need leaders in that Titans dressing room. And I think that he's certainly one that could do that for them.
You know what these contracts are like as well, Adam. You just move a few bits of money around. It don't matter if it's for 4 years. You can move it into the second year when he's at his prime if he wants. Andrew, I mean, a talisman for the Chiefs in their Super Bowl win last season. I mean, obviously made that a crucial play against the Ravens. Again, I think a big leader on the defensive side of the ball, like Adam sort of noted too, but Tennessee are probably needing them sort of star players. Obviously a few exits for Tennessee this year, but we'll stick on just what you thought of the initial trade and this new deal to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great trade for the Titans. I think they did get him really, really cheap, which is why it's really confusing for the Chiefs. You know, I know that obviously last season they had the Chris Jones saga where he was sitting out till he got his deal, so they didn't want that again, so signed him, and they probably don't want the drama again keeping Snead around and having him sit out and, you know, just be around the team and not really adding any value. And I think we all knew that he was out as soon as it was between the two of them. We've said through this whole off-season process that keeping your defensive tackles is worth more than people in the secondary. So we've seen plenty of teams let the secondary go and keep the tackle. So understand it. It's very, very cheap. But yeah, the Titans, for me, have had a really, really nice off-season now. I think the free agency's done really well. They've brought in some really, really key pieces. It's just whether they can make that all click with the quarterback now.
Well, we'll stick on that as I just try and pull up their transactions for here. So they've got out in free agency and signed Calvin Ridley, Lloyd Cushenberry, Chidobe Awuzie. They have also brought in Tony Pollard as well, obviously losing Derek Henry, Azeez Al-Shaair, but bringing in also Kenneth Murray, Sebastian Joseph as well, obviously Mason Rudolph, obviously, which, you know, is a massive highbrow one. Losing Christian Fulton. They've got a few players that have also gone as well and not been signed up yet. Andre Dillard being one, Ryan Tannehill, Terrell Edmonds. I mean, some of these players may return at some point. We never know. A lot of movement by Tennessee this year. And they had obviously a lot of cap to use. And it seems like they've had a bit of a direction, Andrew, and they sort of know what they're going for. And I think Adam alludes to, do you sort of agree that they are looking for some leaders, because they had Mike Vrabel, and he was, you know, the biggest leader going. And then he sort of was the leader for the whole team. And then there was a couple of good players, but it feels like now with the changes they've changed the coach, haven't they? I know I barked at the wrong tree. It just feels like it just happened ages ago, but I can't remember who their new coach is though, off the top of my head.
Brian Callahan.
Brian Callahan. Yes. So there are a lot of changes in Tennessee, and maybe Callahan's philosophy is, you know, he needs players who are leaders, and he's definitely brought in some experience, hasn't he, as well, with players like Awuzie and Ridley.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of experience and a lot of... I like the Pollard move as well. I know a lot of people aren't sure about that, but Spears look good at the back end of the year. So I think they've got two really talented twos, which I think might work for them quite well in the rotational system. Christian Berry, I think, is a very good offensive lineman. I think getting the trenches right would be something they want to get in there. And then, like I said, Calvin Ridley coming over with DeAndre Hopkins, and see if Burks actually works out, is big. And the key piece on the defense as well, I thought Sebastian Joseph Day is really, really underrated for the things he's done at all the clubs he's been at recently. Topping it up with Snead, which we just talked about. So with all those pieces and the division that they're in, you know, apart from the Texans, who we saw, you know, burst onto the scene last year, I think the Colts, although they've got a fantastic head coach in Steichen, can they get it right with Richardson? Can he stay healthy? Because they haven't got Minshew there now. So that's really, really key. And the Jags still think it's a little bit disorganized. You know, they haven't quite hit it off with Lawrence. He's not been healthy. It's not really been what we thought it would be. So I think it's their chance now to kind of be competitive in that division. It all depends on what, like I say, it's now on Will Levis, isn't it? It's I personally haven't seen enough out of him to say, yeah, this team's now playoff worthy with all these pieces. But I think if he manages to play up to a top 15, top quarterback, then, you know, chances are they could be competing for that playoff in such a short turnaround when we thought they were a bit of a disaster last year. So, it's a quick turnaround for them, and new coach as well. So I think they're making the right moves to make the punch in a division that's not fully cemented who's the best definitively. I know the Texans, obviously, were fantastic last year.
I mean, the Titans for me, Adam, have always been a team that I've sort of struggled to get my arms around, because I've always been a bit like, it's just Derrick Henry and running. I've never been that convinced on the receivers they had at the time. Obviously, AJ Brown was very good, but they didn't exactly have the quarterback to make him excel. I've always been a little bit cold on the defense, even though they've performed very well in the last few years. Last year, obviously, was not great for them. And then they've made all these moves, and really, one chapter of this story could be, are they doing all these moves to put Will Levis? They're putting Will Levis in the best position to win. But what if that doesn't happen? Is that then another conversation that then starts to happen in the room?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of all you can do, isn't it, for your quarterback, is put him in a position to be able to do the job as well as they can. And then hopefully they play up to it, basically, is what it is. So if you put all these, bring all these guys, if you bring in like someone like Calvin Ridley as your wide receiver two here, you know, I mean, that you could argue that the Jags had him as the wide receiver one when he went there. It's basically a wide receiver two because you've got Hopkins there. You know, they do have a little bit of depth at wide receiver. It's not amazing, but they do have a little bit there, so it's like that's great. When you got them, you got a competent tight end in Okonkwo. The O-line is not fantastic. That's probably the area of improvement that is needed, but based on where they are in the draft, logic suggests that they will get the best O-line guy there. And bringing in these names on the defense will, in theory, help. And I think you're going to see a bit more of an attacking wide receiver passing game this year with the Titans compared to what you have before. I think Callahan has shown that that's kind of what he wants to do, and that was kind of what his dad did as well. So you feel like that's probably what's going to happen. It's, you know, it's kind of all on Levis now to go out and prove it and show that he can do it with the same as everyone else. And, you know, he's going to have to go up against quarterbacks like CJ Stroud and basically try and emulate what Stroud did this year and do things like that in order to be able to show that he's a success and that he's worth keeping around. Because, you know, he wasn't a first round pick, was he? was he second, wasn't he? I think that they picked him. You know, if it doesn't go well and they're a high pick again next year, and there's decent quarterbacks there, then they, why would they keep him if it's not worked with all of these guys now? So, yeah, I think that's kind of all on him to prove that he's worth keeping around now.
Yeah, it's going to hopefully be... It felt like the South was sort of a two-team division slash a one-team division for a little bit. And now it feels like all the teams are in quite a good position to progress into the future. Obviously, with young quarterbacks across the board, Lawrence being the eldest out of... Well, I think he's the eldest out of all of them, but Lawrence, Will Levis, CJ Stroud, and Anthony Richardson as well. I mean, this could shape up to be a really exciting division. With some really talented players in it as well. And hopefully we'll bring back to sort of a division where it could be all up in the air again, which I feel like every year it sort of is predicted like it is, and it never really happens in that division. It sort of feels like one team sort of runs away with it, or there's sort of two teams going for it. So it's going to be a really fun division to watch the South this year. So it'll be definitely one we keep our eyes on. We'll move on to Tua Tagovailoa. I mean, that just rolled off the tongue for me in my broad Leicester accent. Is a quarterback that has some conversation in the last few days around him because of his contract situation. His contract is up next year. And obviously, in today's NFL world, we are looking ever forward to getting... Well, teams are looking ever forward to getting players like their quarterbacks signed up on early deals. Not a controversial pick, so to speak, but a lot of different opinions around Tua, Adam, when he came out of the draft. It was obviously, he was a very injury prone, was one of them, but an incredibly talented arm. Depends where he lands on how good he could be in certain states and certain weather and certain situations, I suppose. And it's been up and down for Tua throughout his career in Miami. But after the season that he and that team had last season, should this be as much of a conversation as it could well be in the next coming months?
Not really. Mm-hmm. Personally, I don't really get what this conversation is. I'm going to be told why there is this conversation, I know. But it seems somewhat baffling to me. I understand there's been injury history. I get all of that. But... he had the highest pass completion rate last year, apart from Dak and Brock Purdy. He was tied fifth on the amount of touchdowns he got. Most yards in the season. Clear improvement from 2022. I don't see why an NFL team is not going to... It feels very much like you've got yourself a very decent quarterback that you can argue that it's the weapons around him that are helping them things happening. But I think you could argue that for pretty much every quarterback in the league, apart from maybe Mahomes. I don't know why a team would give it up for essentially a rookie, because who are you bringing in? You know, this is the thing. That's if you're bringing in a rookie, I don't get it. If you're going out and you're paying a fortune for someone who we all can look at and go, fair play, that's better, then fair enough. But I don't know who that quarterback is that's suddenly going to become available.
Well, like you said, the stats for his last season were 17 games, 69.3% completion percentage, 4,624 yards, 29 touchdowns, with a career of 12,639 yards, 81 touchdowns. Andrew, I feel like you're not totally in on Tua, man. I feel like, you know, you've got that Ohio State-Alabama rivalry thing, you know, that sort of, you never were big on him in the first place. I mean,
it all makes sense now.
You, man, wow. You've got it. Adam, you've got to get to the dad issues, man. You've got to get to the real ground in your soul issues of why you don't agree with these things. And it's the Ohio State Alabama thing in this case.
I mean, surely it would be Ohio State Michigan if it was rivalry we were talking about, you know, not even in the same.
Come on, Alabama. Alabama's still a rival, though.
Not in the same conference.
The big one.
This has all stemmed from Joel Clapp, essentially. Me and Adam did a Mock the Mock where he had Michael Penix in at the Dolphins, who a lot of people are saying is a bigger, stronger, better arm version of Tua. So he locked him in there. And then there's been other people that have then slowly jumped on it. I heard Nick Wright talking about it on his show, and various others kind of getting on the bandwagon of this. And it's not so much we don't think Tua is good enough, because obviously he showed last year he has got some talent. You know, when he's healthy, he can definitely get the ball out to Hill and Waddle very well. It's more the Dolphins have had to axe lots of players and let them just walk out the door because they're in a bit of cap hell. I think next year isn't much better for them. I think they've got like 20 million to spend next year on the cap space. And it's just in my head, I'm going, would you, because no quarterback plays in their final year of the contract. They get the contract done before they start playing. So there's two things here. If they haven't got a deal done before the draft, are they then now thinking, is he going to sit out through OTAs? Is he going to sit out until we get this deal done? Are we not going to have him in the facility? Should we draft someone just in case? So there's that element of it. The next element is, would you be confident in paying Tua, what, 50, 55 million a year for the next 4 or 5 years? I mean, would either of you both want him at your organization and be go, yeah, I'll pay. Oh, he's good quarterback. I'll pay him 55 million a year when you've had to lose a load of players already. And I'm kind of thinking, is McDaniels can find someone that can do a similar thing to what Tua does? You know, Penix can do this a similar thing and better than what Tua does. So would you not possibly, like Nick Wright said, would you pick up the phone and phone Minnesota and say, you've got 2 first-round picks. Do you like Tua? Because then they can create their own deal with Tua once they've got him. But that's the key. Because he's not got a contract and he's not got a deal done, if they do try and trade him, then someone else can deal with the contract deal after that. So that's the area that I'm at, that I don't think they can afford, nor can they put all their eggs in one basket. You know, the guy was like, literally before the season started last year, was, should I retire? Or, you know, I've been concussed that many times. If it happens again, I might retire. So you're going to give him 5 years, 55 million. Adam, would you give him that big contract?
No, but I don't think anyone would give him that. I don't think the Dolphins will give him that. He's not going to be the top. It doesn't always work like that. He's not going to be the highest paid.
Daniel Jones is on 45, so you've got to be north of that, yeah?
I'd agree on that.
Okay.
I'd say 55 is a fair one. I think it would
be
3 years rather than 5.
Find me the replacement, because you don't know that Michael Penix can do that. You've no idea, because he's never played a snap in the NFL. And so because of that, you can't say that.
I think that argument whittles down to, is Tua this good, or is Mike McDaniel's system this good? Can he do that? Can he make this offense do that under any quarterback that fits that sort of thing? We've seen it with Kyle Shanahan. We've seen it with Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco. He makes court. And again, we've said this before, but it's not a negative being a system quarterback or anything like that. You do not have to be the best quarterback in this league to be, and you can be adequate and you can win games. And is the argument now, is Tua really that good that we're going to pay him that much to go that long? Or have we just got a really great coach and we can get a player with similar aspects like Penix that can do this as well on a cheaper, younger deal? Yeah, he may come with injury worries later on in his career. We don't know that. I don't know Penix's injury history at college. But when we get into the NFL, anything can happen. Anything can happen with that. So there is that. Are we dangerously treading into Dak territory here, where we looked at what Dallas did with Dak's contract, and now it's coming up again soon. And we talked about this last week. And they really have been quite landlocked. And actually, they did it, and they still haven't won the Super Bowl. You know, is there a worry that this could happen as well for Miami?
Did we go with me or that? Sorry.
Go for it.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, well, that's entirely my point, isn't it? Overpaying for someone that you've already got in the building. That, you know, McDaniels didn't even draft Tua, did he? It's not his guy. So, you know, he can no longer ever use the excuse that that's, you know, it's not my guy. You know, if you give him the big contract and you commit to him, you're saying he is my guy. We are going to win now, which is what kind of the Cowboys did as well. They were like, Dak's our guy. We trust in him. So we're going to overpay him and let other people walk out the door and be happy with it. That's my issue. They've already decimated their team in free agency this time round. So what does it do for them? Even if Adam says it might not be over 50, if it's 46, 47, who else do you let go? Are you going to have to let go some of your other bigger names after that?
I'm just getting that up actually, just to have a little look at what the cap situation is. I mean, when we go into 2025.
You have a quick read. Adam, do you think that Tua is good enough to, if would you be happy to say, yeah, Green Bay, I'll have him for 4 years, some 50
No,
years.
No, of course not, because we've got better.
I know you've already got better. That's not the point. I'm saying if you were in the situation where if you were the Vikings, would you say, you know, we wouldn't mind someone who can distribute the ball to Jefferson and Addison well?
Yeah, I'd love to give him Tua. I think we'd probably win quite a lot. It'd be a good idea, that. What's your problem? The problem is, it's really difficult. I just look at it and go, you need to bring in better. You know, that's the problem. You can't just go, oh, we'll have that guy because he might be better. I just don't think NFL teams think in that way.
Well, they've got a decision to make, haven't they? Because he's not going to play.
Yeah, absolutely. They do. I just don't think that teams think in that way. I just don't think they go, oh, look, there's this. I know there's recency bias and a lot of people like the new young thing and all that sort of thing. And I understand that. But like, I just don't think that teams will go, we've got this guy. He's clearly improved in his time that he's been here. But we're going to get rid of him and we're going to start again in the hope that this guy can do better, because we don't know. Now, if you're the number one pick and you're getting Caleb Williams, well, that's a whole different conversation. But they're not, are they? They're the 2021, is it? I think the Dolphins are. You know, so even if they move up a little bit, they're still not getting any of the top three. So what are you bringing in that's you know, that you know for sure is going to be better? And the answer is you're not. So I think because of that, it's bad accounting. It's bad GM stuff. That's the problem, not so much Tua. I mean, I think you're just trying to find a quick fix for their bad financial management, which, you know, it's like, well, they deserve to be punished for it, don't they? So, no.
But what if they draft a quarterback in this draft coming up, or move up and get one? Don't move off Tua. Let him sit and just let Tua's contract run out until next year, and they don't do anything about picks or anything like that.
I mean, you could go down that route, but then you're dealing with a quarterback playing on his last year. Is he going to want to do that? Is he going to be happy that you've brought in a quarterback to basically potentially replace him? Is he just going to go, sod you, I'm going to sit and do nothing then? And then you've got no quarterback. You know, that's the problem with that. I mean, it's an angle you can go down if you can hope that Tua will play. But, I mean, we've seen a few times now in the past, haven't we, that quarterbacks tend to get a bit, you know, a bit aggy if they don't like that. They get a bit funny about it.
No quarterback's going to play on their last year. If they get injured or anything like that, then they've got no guarantees for the future and they're done. So he's going to I think he'll sit out if he doesn't get a deal done.
So if the Vikings are obviously a team that has been battered around by the bigwigs and by other reporters out there, is there any other teams that we think would maybe think about it?
The only other one would be the Raiders, wouldn't it? Because it's not. There's no way that he could go to the Broncos.
You know, I think they could get that done. I don't see anyone else. I really don't.
You'd be asking one of the guys that's one, two, or three. Would you be asking the Patriots or you'd be asking the Commanders? Yeah. Would you prefer Tua? You've seen what he can do. Would he fit in there a bit more? I mean, that's the thing. If they do manage to get a trade done, you know, the likelihood of it happening is probably none. But I feel like we've got to talk about it because it's a topic. Because Tua is good, but he's got to be worth first round picks, hasn't he? So if you're getting picks for him, you can use those picks to then move up the draft. You know, I know we'll talk about it next week, but there's a load of JJ McCarthy hype that's just flying around, and we'll definitely be talking that next week, because I never thought we'd be at this point saying JJ McCarthy hype, that he could be going at like 2 at the minute.
It helps when your ex-coach goes to bat for you, doesn't it?
When you've got the pick that people are going to trade for to get him. Oh yeah, he's amazing, come and have my pick off me to have him. Yeah, that makes sense. But you know, they could then build all those things up and go up and get someone and move up to like the fourth spot if they've got the picks from Tua. So if it comes to draft day and they haven't got a deal done, would you gamble on taking someone?
I don't know. Who have they got as backup?
Mike White?
No.
I think for me, for Tua, I think I think organizations will think this as well. Tua is a warm weather quarterback. It feels that way. He's not a cold weather quarterback. Someone like Minnesota could take him. They play inside. They're going to play out of their six divisional games. They're going to play four of them indoors. So you could work with that.
In Green Bay. That's what we'd like to see, wouldn't it? When he comes to Green Bay and that cold, that's two games in the book straight away. Brilliant idea.
Potentially, but I think after seeing Miami and watching a lot of them, trying to watch a lot of them because we obviously got to see them this year in Germany, and obviously Mike McDaniels is such a polarizing character, and he's on social media a lot, and he seems to be everywhere in the media when it is in season. I do think Tua is his guy, much like Dak is the cat. Well, Dak is Jerry Jones is Dak's. Dak's Jerry Jones's guy. No, Jerry Jones is Dak's guy. Either way, one of them. It's never the coach. It's always Jerry Jones. So I think he's going to get signed up there. I think that will probably happen sooner rather than later. That's going to happen. But it would be very, very fun to see a little trade between Minnesota and people moving up and down here, which way and anyway. Andrew, Adam, thank you very much for joining me this evening. Thank you guys for listening and watching as well. We'll be back with a lot of draft content all the way up leading to the draft. It's going to be a lot of fun. Obviously, it's not for everyone knowing about college stuff. You may not know anything. You may know a lot. So we're going to, we will be talking about people, but trying to also dip into the simplistic things as well for people that don't know them sort of things. But then also both of these guys watch a hell of a lot of college football. They have a deep, deep knowledge of these players who are coming into this draft. So for the more sophisticated college fan as well, there's going to be plenty of content for you. We always try and keep it rounded here at the Franchise Tag. But it is definitely the lead up to draft season now. Going to be a lot of fun. Thank you for listening, for watching, and we'll see you all again next week.